Preston here with you. We're going to talk about stuff here today. We have a guest during the first hour. We're going to talk about war. Is it ever justified? Did we have one of those justified wars recently? Are we cleaning up the aftermath of one or that was justified, or did we blow it? Is there a way to organize our thoughts about trying to figure out these things? We're going to talk with a fellow who has spent a great deal of time thinking about it. Dr. Greg Bahnsen is going to be on the line here in just a moment, talking about at least a Christian view of war. Is there such a thing? Does anybody give a rip? Is there such a thing as a theology of war? I know we've had a lot of God talk this week, but we're honoring the Congress of the United States is honoring, as you just heard on ABC News just a few moments ago, Stormin Norman for his successful waging of war in Iraq. Stop and think about this question here for a second. We intervened in Panama. Did we make anything any better over there? We intervened in Vietnam. Did we really make it any better over there? We've just finished or are in the process of continuing to intervene in Iraq and Kuwait. Did we really make it any better over there? We have to think about these things if we are to figure out what we're going to do in the future when these issues arise. Later, we're going to talk with Dave Stanley from Iowans for Tax Relief. He says the legislature of the state of Iowa is about ready to expire, and it hasn't dealt with the taxpayers fairly. We're going to talk about that for a while, and then we'll have some open topic time during the next hour. Well, is war ever justified? Dr. Greg Bahnsen is here. How shall we describe you, Dr. Bahnsen?
Well, I'm a minister of the gospel, Presbyterian by denomination, and currently scholar in residence at the Southern California Center for Christian Studies, where we do a lot of work in publishing and lecturing and debating.
Okay. Debating on what kinds of things?
Well, we debate the question of God's existence and the truth of the Christian faith. We debate ethical issues, Christians' involvement in the world, socio-political matters. And so both in apologetics and in ethics, we try to defend the Christian worldview and show its advantages and superiority to its alternatives.
If I were to ask you the question just this way, in fact, I'm going to. Well, was the most recent war in the Middle East justified? Was Operation Just Cause indeed a just cause?
Well, obviously, when you ask the question looking for a yes or no answer, and there has to be a yes or no answer because I don't think we live in a world of relativism, but it's going to be subject to misunderstanding if there isn't something by way of a lead-in explanation of what a just war is and then how that would be applied.
Is there such a thing?
I believe there is such a thing as a just war. From the standpoint of biblical revelation, though we know war stems from the sinful desires of men and therefore war is always a spiritual failure for us as human beings, nevertheless, in a fallen world where we have to deal with that sinful nature of man, there are going to be occasions where war is the appropriate response to aggression.
So you're not a pacifist?
Not at all. I think that though the ideals of the pacifist are correct ideals and the things that we as Christians should be striving for, we will not accomplish that by simply laying down our arms and pretending the world isn't a fallen place with aggressive individuals that will violently take advantage of the innocent.
Saddam Hussein took advantage, I don't know about the innocent, but he took advantage certainly of the Kuwaitis. He's a Hitler-esque figure capable of all kinds of atrocities. Certainly, you must agree that bringing a tyrannical, lawless individual like him to bay is a noble cause, right?
Well, he's been described as the butcher of Baghdad, and though there's obviously rhetorical force to that, I think there's moral force to it as well. He is a man that deserves to be driven from power and to be brought to justice for his crimes against his own people and other peoples of the world as well.
So I guess
there's
the
no
answer,
question about him being an evil man, and there's no question about it being good that he'd be brought down. The real question is, what is the just and morally appropriate way for that to take place?
All right. I'll bite. What is the just and moral way to bring his regime to an end?
Okay, well, the question, because we asked whether this was a just war, meaning was it just for us as the United States to intervene, the real question is going to become, has God granted to us the United States of America the right to police the world. As wrong as Saddam Hussein is, and as ideal as it would be for him to be driven from power, the real question is whether we have been authorized by God to expend the lives and money, property of our citizens in order to accomplish that noble end. And I don't believe that the Bible warrants that kind of thinking for not only the United States, but for any other nation of the world. The problems of the Middle East have got to be taken care of in the Middle East. Our intervention, I'm afraid, betrays something of a messianic complex and way of thinking for us as Americans that, you know, we've got the right answers and therefore we have the right to go anywhere in the world and to impose those answers. Now, that isn't to say that I disagree with the goal of having this man driven from power, but I certainly disagree with the idea that, that our children and our money should be used to do that.
Well, what about these guys? Maybe in the way the Bible discusses this, well, these guys are our neighbors, right? We're supposed to take care of our neighbors. We're supposed to love our neighbors, right?
Wrong. That is an analogy which is inappropriate. We are to take care of our neighbors. The Bible teaches that, but it would be a grave mistake to transfer what the Bible teaches about interpersonal relations to international relations. To treat nations as neighbors with one another in the same way that your next-door neighbor and you are neighbors would be not only a monumental conceptual mistake, but it will lead to ethical mischief all over the place. It's also the husbands and wives are supposed to love each other and to have sexual relations with each other, but no one in their right mind tries to transfer that analogy to international affairs. Jesus told us that when we're dealing with individuals and we can avoid provocation and walk away from a fight, that we're obligated to do that. We're to turn the other cheek. He was not giving instructions for international relations when he said that. So it is true that we are to take care of our neighbors, you know, person on person, but there is no instruction in the Bible that says that we are, as a nation, obligated to expend human life, to spill human blood, to spend the money and resources of a nation to take care of the internal affairs or even the external affairs of another nation.
All right, hang on to this. Dr. Greg Bahnsen is here. He is a theologian who is trying to help us think about the nature of war. When is, and if it is a just cause, when is it appropriate to intervene? He's not a pacifist. Yeah, but he's taken us in directions that maybe you didn't expect to. So, geez, we're trying to figure all this out. Plus, if you'd like to join the conversation, here's where, 284-1040. It's 21 after 9 on 1040 WHO Radio. Michelson here with you. Dr. Greg Bahnsen is here, and he is a theologian who is talking about war. Whether, under what circumstances is war justified? A brief question, Doc, before we go to our phone callers, okay?
Okay.
You were saying, well, yeah, well, all right, we can't use the rules that were given for interpersonal relationships to extend them to international relations. That's a mistake.
That's right.
All right, how about this then? The United States signed a treaty with the United Nations, which it sort of obligates us to use the United Nations as a legitimate international force for peace. And everybody acknowledges, well, that's a noble cause. And you said earlier that peace is a noble cause.
Right.
All right. We agreed, and the United Nations voted to use force over there and to get the Iraqis out of Kuwait and authorize the United States to go to war. Our own elected representatives of the United States tacitly accepted that jurisdiction when it agreed to ratify that UN vote. Therefore, we're dealing with this issue through rule of law, through our elected representatives, for the cause of peace. That validated our jurisdiction, that put the good seal of housekeeping on our tactics. We won. We can now go right off into the sunset, patting ourselves on the back and giving a national award to Storm and Norman in the joint session of Congress.
Well, obviously, Jan, there are going to be some people that have trouble believing that anything the United Nations does is automatically morally acceptable. I find it more than just a little bit ironic that many of the socio-political conservatives in this country who have for years railed upon the United Nations for its liberalism and for its interventionism and for principles that they don't agree with, are now all of a sudden willing to use appeal to the United Nations to sanction what they wanted to do in Iraq. When we, as the United States, intervened in Panama and the United Nations condemned that, we thumbed our nose at the United Nations and said, too bad. We believe that it was morally right and we did it. Now that we have the United Nations behind us in this particular skirmish in Iraq, then we're very happy to appeal to that as our moral justification. And so what happens here, if you're going to be honest, you see, as an ethicist, you have to look at that kind of thing and say, hasn't the United Nations become something of a taxi that we use for our convenience? When it's going the way we want it to go, then we're glad to use it. And when it goes contrary to the direction we want to go, then we openly condemn it. And so I don't believe that it shows integrity for us to believe that United Nations is really what we think morally justifies intervention anywhere in the world. Because, as a matter of fact, we intervene and don't intervene according to our own desires and according to our own way of thinking, regardless of the United Nations. And then there's the second issue, and that is, even if we totally submitted to the United Nations every time it made a decision, does the United Nations itself carry the moral authority to authorize warfare? Does it have genuine political jurisdiction anywhere in this world? Or is it a voluntary organization whose advice can be taken or not taken and that sort of thing? I don't believe that we can use the United Nations in a way that's analogous to, say, the Congress of the United States. It's one thing for us to say we have elected officials who make a decision and they have the authority, the political authority, to do that, and we submit to them. It's another thing to transfer that by analogy to the United Nations. The United Nations is not a ruling body in this country. And consequently, the appeal to the United Nations is not only, in some senses, hypocritical on our part, but even where the United Nations agrees with us, it can only agree with us, if you're going to do this from a moral standpoint, it can only agree with us and therefore give us some kind of sanction in what we're doing, if what we're doing is right.
Well, all right, let's take it from the nationalistic approach here briefly.
Okay.
He was a Hitlerist figure, threatening to lock up and control the oil wealth to which Americans and the Western industrial might depends. And the guy was unstable. He was a threat to the existence of Israel. Still is, created great acts of nastiness with the threat of chemical, biological, and nuclear capacity. It was in the United Nations, in the United States' best interest to pull the plug on this jerk.
It is not the United States' right to pull the plug on this jerk until this jerk becomes a direct and immediate threat to us. That is, just war is defensive in its purposes. And when we are at the point of defending our own citizens, of course we have the right to intervene.
In an international economy, an attack on an international resource is an attack on the United States.
No, I don't believe that thinking can be accepted as cogent. Anytime somebody does something in the international economic market that is going to put a hardship on the United States, you would then be justified in going to war against that person. And, of course, from a Christian standpoint, there's no way we can justify that way of thinking. To think that because my economic well-being is going to be adversely affected by what's happening, say, in the Japanese stock market, that therefore we have the right to intervene over there.
So the short answer is we blew it?
I'm afraid that we blew it, although, you know, you talked about Storm and Norman being honored. It's one thing to say that the political administration made an immoral decision to involve us in something that I don't think God would approve for us to be involved in. It's another thing altogether to say that we don't support the troops and the men who are over there. I'm afraid that there's a lot of shallow ethical thinking on the part of those who do oppose the war that leads them to think, I have to oppose the soldiers and the men who are there. I, for one, as you can tell, don't support the political decision to be there. But I'm totally in support of the men who went over and risked their lives and I think did, you know, from a strategic standpoint, did a fantastic job. I feel a lot better as an American knowing that they're able to do such a good job. It's just I don't believe the Bush administration should have sent them to do it.
Dr. Greg Bahnsen is on our line with us right now, and he is telling you what he views as a Christian view of war. And I think we painted all of chased all the rabbits, didn't we?
I think we've touched on most of the rabbit trails that we get down in these discussions.
Okay. So with that in mind, folks, we're going to take a short time out and come right to our phone lines. What do you think? Do you agree or disagree? He thinks that from our traditional ethical Christian worldview, we made a mistake getting involved over there. What do you think? Back in just a moment. 9:32 on 1040 WHO Radio. Keith Kirkpatrick is going to join us in about 4 minutes for our farm and market update. Right now, Dr. Greg Bahnsen is on our telephone line right now from California, from the Southern California Center for Christian Studies, and he's telling us about the theology of war. Doc, let's talk to some of our listeners, okay?
Good.
Yeah, let's begin with John. Good morning.
Morning. I believe it was Jesus was quoted in the Bible as saying there will always be war and rumors of war. Wouldn't it seem to, if there's a just God, that he would give us some instrument or institution such as the United Nations to fight these battles and to quench the rumors?
Well, I think that the Bible teaches us God has given us an agency by which war can be dealt with in this world. And that really needs to be seen in two ways. First of all, God has authorized civil government to protect its citizens, and therefore even in the outward violent sense of war, God has morally authorized the way of dealing with that, and we can talk more about that. But I think more importantly, as a minister of the gospel, we have to understand that the only way in which we're ultimately going to be able to deal with war is not through the United Nations and other agencies that neglect the spiritual problem of man, but we're going to be able to deal with war by changing the hearts of individuals and teaching them to live at peace with each other. And that's a long, arduous process, and history has seen a lot of ups and downs in it. But we do find in the Christian church that when people come to the Savior, Jesus Christ, that they learn in their growth as Christians to be at peace with each other, and that becomes then a model for other people learning to be at peace with each other. And eventually, we would like to believe that's going to put an end to the kind of easy resort to violence that we see in the world, not only in the criminal element of our world, but also in the wars between nations. And so, yes, God would give us a way to put warfare away, and I think he has given us that way. Unfortunately, the United Nations doesn't agree with the way God has given for ending war, and that's why I don't support it.
Well, you speak into the future, but I think if you just look at history, this is not the case. There has been terrible turmoil among Christian nations and
yes, that's right. That's one of the scandals of Christian history, that so often those who profess the name of the Prince of Peace haven't shown that peace in their own relationships.
How would that apply to international relations where you deal with countries that are of a different religious background? I mean, how would this even apply in a Muslim situation?
Well, obviously, the only way we're going to see the Muslim world be at peace within its own borders and also at peace with Israel and at peace with Christian nations is to see the Muslim world converted to the same worldview and religious outlook and ethical standards that we as Christians endorse.
But short of that, I mean, you're talking about rule of law then under the same religious assumptions, but short of that, though, until that, what are we going to do in the meantime?
Short of that is, apart from missionary work being accomplished, the only thing we can do is to defend our own citizens against outward aggression. And so when the Muslim world is not willing to live at peace with its Christian neighbors, the Christian neighbors have the right to defend themselves. But we do not have the right to wage some kind of holy war of intervention, some kind of crusade to go in there by military might to change their minds or to get them to do their internal affairs in the way that we think is best.
So bringing the peace by the sword is not a just cause.
No, I think bringing the peace by the sword is not just ironic. It's a contradiction in terms that should be exposed. Mm-hmm. We do not bring peace by the sword. We may be able to...
And you don't bring converts by the sword either, right?
No, of course not. The only way people are going to change their mind and have a relationship with God and with their neighbor that is different is by having an internal renovation internal change of heart that only the Holy Spirit can give through the preaching of the gospel.
All right. This is Dr. Greg Bahnsen, and theologians are paid to talk that way. And he's talking to us about a view of war here, and he says we probably blew it when we took our armies and went east with them. We're going to come back right after Keith Kirkpatrick updates us in our farm and market spec right after that. Well, the Oreck folks have announced a brand new sale for this month. It's called their Spring Cleaning 2-for-1 Sale, and the best sale to come around from Oreck in a long time. Anybody in need of the famous 8-pound Oreck XL upright that they've always wanted can save up to $220 right now. Take advantage of this sale if you can. First, choose your Oreck XL upright model, then add your choice, the Super Buster B attachment vac or the all-new Oreck Power Brush hand vac and spot cleaner or the Oreck Dual Power Broom Vacuum. All the combinations are specially priced to sell now. So see the selection that your authorized Oreck dealer has to offer and ask about their no-risk shopping policy. In Marshalltown, your authorized Oreck dealer is 13th Street Vacuum. In Ames, your authorized Oreck dealer is Ames Sewing and Vacuum, or call 1-800-328-9430 for the Oreck dealer nearest you. To our phone lines here, the fella is Dr. Greg Bahnsen. By the way, he has an interesting tape series, a three-tape series of three lectures on this subject, and along with a study guide that I have found extremely useful. I'll tell you more about where you can get that in a little bit. But right now, Doc, let's talk to some of our listeners, okay? And let's go to Steve. Good morning.
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Bahnsen
about
his just war theory. First of all, I agree with his analysis of the Persian Gulf War. But I would like to ask him this question. According to Jesus Christ, an act is good and acceptable before God as it touches upon the heart, affections, and motives. And I'm wondering how you can formulate a just war theory when the leaders of our nation may not be Christians, their motives for war do not reflect critical biblical thinking nor justification. Or to ask the question in another way, more related to your profession as a minister of the gospel, how does the 16th chapter of the Westminster Confession on Good Works fit into your just war theory? Because according to this chapter, paragraph 7, a work to be good and acceptable before God must proceed from a heart purified by faith, done in a right manner according to the word of God, and done to the right end the glory of God. Do we ever have the hope, therefore, of having a just war? I know we can't see the hearts nor read the hearts or motives of our leaders that propose wars, but we can certainly judge if there's any evidence of critical biblical thinking and justification. And my question, it's a serious question because I've tried to think through this. How can we have a just war if our leaders are almost self-confessedly secular and atheistic in the way they talk about war and justify it?
Yeah, and they have some goal like instituting some kind of a new world order as being an underlying feature. And thank you, Steve. Dr. Bahnsen, go ahead.
Well, I think that's a very good question, and I think Steve will find it helpful in trying to work it through to distinguish between what is a good work before God for an individual. Let's say George Bush on the Day of Judgment, when God examines his heart and evaluates it, what will count as a good work in terms of this question of war? Steve has brought up a good point. If he's not doing this in a way to glorify God and submit to his word and so forth, then George Bush as an individual will answer to his maker for that. But that is a different question from the socio-political, ethical question of just war. Just war and good works are not the same thing. The same Westminster Confession of Faith in chapter 23, Steve, says, it is lawful for Christians to accept and execute the office of a magistrate when called thereunto, in the managing whereof, as they ought especially to maintain piety, justice, and peace, according to the wholesome laws of each commonwealth, so for that end they may lawfully, now under the New Testament, wage war upon just and necessary occasion. So the issue here in the confession is, what is a just occasion for war? Totally apart from the heart motives of the individuals involved, what outward affairs in the world would justify engaging in violence against your neighbor? And I believe the answer to that is only when it's in self-defense. I don't believe you have a just occasion for war when you're trying to protect your lifestyle or...
Or your oil supply.
Yeah, your oil supply, what have you.
Okay.
But it's one thing to say that the occasion is just. It's another thing to say that it's a good work for those who are involved.
How about this? If we had a mutual defense treaty with Kuwait, and we literally owned the oil fields or had a big chunk of the action, and it is not our would we have an obligation to defend, therefore, our property?
Well, the question is, could we, if we were a Christian nation, and I know that's speaking as an ideal, we are not at present acting as a Christian nation, but if we were a Christian nation, would we ever have the right to help an oppressed people, like, say, the Kuwaitis in that situation? And I believe that the answer is yes, under the appropriate circumstances. And those circumstances would be that the Kuwaiti people would accept not only the privileges of American citizenship, that is to say, our military protection, but they would accept also the responsibilities of American citizenship. And I would have no difficulty, conceptually anyway, with the idea of oppressed people around the world asking to become another state of the United States, in which case we can throw our lawful protection and military might behind an effort to save those people and extricate them from the butcher of Baghdad.
Yeah,
and so forth.
You know how well that's
short of that.
You know how well that's going to go over.
Oh, that's not going to go over well.
Yeah, Kuwait being our 51st state.
Well, they wouldn't wish to do that either.
Yes,
and,
right.
And that points out, again, part of the moral hypocrisy of our being involved there, that what these people want are the protections of citizenship without the responsibilities. And I think that is it's wrong for any individual.
Not only that, we were precluded from even having Christmas celebrations and exercising our own faith as far as individual soldiers is concerned while on foreign soil.
You know, obviously that offends me as a minister of the gospel. Now, I realize that a large number of the soldiers there don't have any genuine religious interest in Christianity, but for the sake of those who are there, if the Kuwaitis or if the Saudis want a Christian nation or at least a nation that has its Christian tradition and people who are Christians to come over and to protect them, I think it's totally wrong morally for them to interfere with the with our pursuing our own religious ritual and our own religious conviction.
Doc, I need to take a time out here. We're going to take a short time out. Dr. Greg Bonson is on the line. I know this maybe is the most unusual conversation regarding war that you've ever heard. But if we use the term Operation Just Cause, what does that mean? Well, this fellow has tried to figure it out, and he said, weren't a just cause at all. Back in a sec. It's 5 before the top of the hour on 1040 WHO Radio. A lot of you have questions. This is really one of the more unusual conversations we've had recently. Dr. Greg Bonson is here, and he says... as a theologian, he says our most recent endeavor in incursion into the Middle East was not justified, at least from his theological background. His name is Dr. Greg Bonson. By the way, if you would like to get this tape series or get more information about any of the books that he's written, here's the number to call. It's 916-268-3914. Doc, let's talk to some more folks, okay?
Go ahead.
And this is J.E. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think?
Well, first of all, just cause wasn't what they called this last military. That goes back to Panama. That's what they called just cause. But I had a question for the doctor. He seems to be, if I understand it, he disagrees with military maneuvers, military intervention in a case where we are not directly in threat ourselves. The problem I see is, does that mean that he also would oppose humanitarian aid to the Kurds or humanitarian aid to Bangladesh or any of that kind of intervention in the internal or external affairs of another country?
Good question. What do you think, Doc?
Well, I'm not at all against the humanitarian efforts to help the Kurds or to help the people of Bangladesh and so forth, but I am against the government being the source and provider of that charity. Throughout Christian history, Christians have been able to help other people and to help other nations that have gone through disaster and so forth without the government putting its sword behind the efforts. The only problem I have then with intervention of a humanitarian sort is when the government takes it upon itself to enforce it with threats of imprisonment and so forth because people don't pay their taxes and then the tax money is used to do this. I think voluntary organizations like the Christian Church, the Red Cross, and so forth have every moral right to offer that when it is desired and acceptable to the people receiving the aid.
I'd agree with you, Doc, except for one case. We unleashed the terrible, wretched activity against the Kurds and encouraged them to rise up against Saddam Hussein, causing the carnage, in essence, against the Kurdish population. Don't we, therefore, have a degree of responsibility for bailing them out of activities we encourage them to do in our behalf?
Jan, we don't disagree on that at all. When I was answering your caller, I was trying to lay down the more general moral premise that humanitarian aid is morally acceptable when it's done through a voluntary organization and so forth. But now what we have to do, we have a complicated situation where our government has wrongly entered into the internal affairs of two nations. And we have, I agree with you, I think we have encouraged the...
My other point is, what about a situation where a country...
Jay, if you could come in. Jay, speak up for it. Hang on, Doc. Finish your point, Jay.
We were asked by more than one country to come in and assist, and do we then look at them and say, well, I'm sorry, we don't get involved?
All right, I've got it. All right, Doc, what do you think? We were invited by numbers of nations to get involved, and we all sort of agreed to do it.
Yeah, and prostitutes invite their johns to get involved, too, and that doesn't make it morally right. The fact that the Kuwaitis may have wanted us there, and I say may because there are questions about that, too, the fact that the Saudis may have wanted us there does not mean that God has given to this nation the right. Remember, American lives were lost in that. Praise God, not as many as might have been in previous wars, but the fact is we lost lives, we lost a great deal of money, which we are all paying for. And the question is, has God authorized this nation to use the money and the blood of its citizens to engage in that kind of a crusade?
All right, hang on to that. We're going to come back. Thank you for your call there, J.E. Those of you on the line, if you can stay put, do so. I've asked my guests to stay with us a bit longer. 9 minutes after 10 on 1040 WHO Radio. We'll have some open topic time coming up shortly. But before we do anything else, let's continue briefly our conversation we began during the last hour with Dr. Greg Bahnsen. He is a theologian, written many, many books, and he also has a tape series on this question, on the Christian view of war. Now, that might not be an important question to you, but if you use questions like a just cause or a just war theory, as our president has done and as our Congress has asserted, and as the theologians have debated, it's an open question, is it not? And theologians for thousands of years have discussed this subject, and most recently, Greg's, Dr. Bahnsen's tape series, three tapes in this one, it's a lecture, it's really interesting. It's called The Christian View of War. You can get it by calling 916-268-3914 and find out about some of the books as well. All right. Doc, let's talk to some more of our listeners, okay?
Good.
Well, for those folks who are just joining us, I know this is an impossible task. Can we summarize what your basic position is in a short period of time?
Yes, I think so. Basically, from a Christian viewpoint, we see war coming about in the world because of the greed and the selfishness of men. And war is one of the things that arises from sinful lust and desire, but also war is used by civil governments as a way of defending their own citizens, and I think God has authorized that in His holy word. So a defensive war is a just war, and my difficulty with the present or the most recent encounter we've had in Iraq is that I don't see that it was genuinely in the defense of the citizens of our own country. and the way in which a Christian would authorize protection or help to oppressed people around the world is rather controversial, I realize, but the only way in which I think that could be extended, military might could be extended to help those people, is if they wanted to accept the responsibilities of citizenship and be part of the nation whose beneficence they are asking for.
Okay, let's talk to some of our listeners. Ken, thank you for your patience. Good morning. You're talking right now with Greg Bonson.
Yeah, I would say that I have not heard a single argument that I would agree with,
all right,
other than the talk about faith in Christ, which is a completely different subject.
Okay.
But here's the I think the problem is that the doctrine and many people that get in this position have a very simplistic view of the world, and what they're saying is that we're authorized to go to war once we see an immediate threat, like the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. But short of that, it's hard to find any way in which they would agree that there's any just cause or that we ought to be at war.
Well, that's not my
and the world is more complex than that, and if everybody sat around and waited until they were surrounded and attacked, then I submit that that there's a worse breakdown of morality. And we go back, for example, and look at the Israelis when they preemptively struck the nuclear weapons facilities in Iraq.
Yes.
Nobody can argue that they were immediately attacked. They had to make a decision that they were threatened, and they acted on it. Had they not done that and got 5 years down the road and got,
yes,
attacked with nuclear weapons and lost 3 million of their people, who could argue that was a more moral position to have taken than the position that they did take?
Great point. What do you think, Doc?
Well, I think he hasn't described my position at all, so maybe that's why he disagrees with it. The fact that a war is just when it is defensive does not mean that a preventive use of warfare cannot be defensive. A defensive war might involve a preventive strike against someone when there's a clear intention to attack your country. And when I heard this description of we have to wait until we're attacked like at Pearl Harbor before we'd intervene, basically my response is, well, that's not my position, and that would be simplistic and naive. However, once we introduce the question of intervening for preventive purposes, then if we're going to be honest about that, not use that simply as a general cloak to do anything we want to do, then we do have to realize it becomes more difficult to show the just cause of the war. There must be a clear intention to attack your country that justifies your taking the first step to prevent that attack from taking place. But a just war theory has never ruled out preventive warfare. That's my response.
Ken, does that clear it up for you?
No, it doesn't clear it up at all, because I think it still begs the question. He says that there has to be a clear intent. You're arguing whether there was clear, you can argue whether there was clear intent to attack Israel at the time. And these are judgments that have to be made. And so if we're going to make these kind of judgments, I think rather than talking about them on a theoretical moral point of view like he's doing, then we ought to get down and talk about world politics and whether or not the strength of world politics, the impact of the economic community, the impact of this situation on the economic community of the world involves a direct immediate threat. There is such a thing as a threat short of direct immediate attack upon you, and if you wait for that, you're asking for trouble. And so I think he's begging the question. He's saying on the surface of it is immoral, and I disagree. The discussion ought to be whether or not there is such whether or not this could impact us. If we agreed that this could impact us in the world market, that the Western economies could be collapsed, that there could be all kind of suffering, perhaps death in Israel, and some of these arguments were made against if Saddam Hussein is left the way he is, then we can't just write it off as a simple, this wasn't moralistic. Sure, it's more difficult to make your case, but it doesn't mean the case isn't there, and I think these people are just writing it off that there is no case to be made, that the world balance of power and all the things that wars have been fought on in the past are in fact legitimate points of discussion, and that you can go to war. And if we hadn't waited so long in World War II, there was an immorality in World War II when they did not stand with Hitler because they couldn't show an immediate threat, because people argued, well, he's not going any further. And then we lost how many millions of people in this world, and I contend that there is a immorality in not recognizing that the world is a fallen place, that it is a dangerous place, and that we've got to talk about it in deeper terms than just whether or not there's a, we can justify that there is so clear an immediate threat that we could go to war. There's,
well, Jan,
there's
I think,
more subtle threats.
Hang on, Ken. Doc, what do you think?
Well, I think one, your caller may want to go back to his logic books and look up what begging the question is. I'm not begging any question. Basically, the caller is arguing that I don't like the question that you're raising. That is, I don't want it to have to be something where there's a clear intention that justifies going to war. I don't want it to have to be a moral matter because that's just too simplistic. And with the world, the situation being what it is, if, you know, then on and on and on these details, we have to get involved and so forth. But can he really be serious that he doesn't think that there has to be some kind of evidence that we are being done harm before we have a right to enter into a military conflict? I really don't think he's thought that through. He may not like that question being raised, but I'm going to raise the question anyway. Who gives you the right, or who gives the United States the right, or who gives France the right? Where does anyone get the moral right to take the life of another individual or to use the money of its citizens to prosecute even a good cause? I'd like to know, what is the moral standard that the caller is applying here? I can tell you what my moral standard is. I'm not begging the question. I'll put it right out on the table for discussion. But what's his moral standard?
Okay. Ken, you would like to respond to that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then hang on, because I need to take a short time out. We'll do that. This is a strong argument here. This is the nitty-gritty of this whole thing. Join us as we return to Michael's The Morning in just a sec. 21 after 10 on 1040 WHO Radio. I understand the frustration of a conversation like this, folks, and I know we're moving slowly through the calls, and we have lots of really good ones to come. This is not a conversation that lends itself well to a superficial analysis. That's why we got ourselves into these kinds of problems to begin with. So I'm willing to spend additional time thinking these issues through, because I think that's what you expect out of a program like this. Dr. Greg Bonson is on our newsmaker line right now. He is a theologian who says our most recent war was not morally justified. Ken, you wanted to make the point here before we move on.
Yeah, I'll just make one. I disagree with him that it's not thought through. The only point I'm trying to make is it's fine to make the moral argument, but ultimately you have to define, there has to be room to make a definition of what is a clear and immediate threat, or what is a legitimate enough threat to use your national power. And that's where I agree that there can be a debate about that, and that if we want to go back to the Middle East, we ought to debate about whether or not we have enough of a threat to the world economy, to the world community, to justify what we did. And I don't mind people having that debate. But what I hear, you have to realize that you can always figure out clear and immediate threat after the fact. Before the fact, it is a more difficult question. And to just sort of write it off, and which is what I keep hearing out of him, I don't see how you ever get to the point that it is so clear that you have to take action until, in many cases, it's so late that you have incurred greater loss of life. And therefore, there is a greater immorality. So I think there is a legitimate argument to say that we can look at our national interest and we can make a determination that the ultimate threat to life is greater in the future than it is right now if we don't do something.
I guess the question is, whose life, though, Ken?
Well, who's
are we called to be as the policemen of the world?
No, we're not called to be policemen of the world. And for these people that use that argument, I think that they are they bang on conservatives for using the United Nations. I don't think there is a hypocrisy there. I think the only reason that some conservatives are appealing to the argument about the United Nations is that
it's a question of jurisdiction.
People say we don't have to be policemen of the world, and I think conservatives are only making the point that we were not being just policemen of the world, that the world community in this case was united. Certainly we don't act in concert all the time with the United Nations. We act in our own interest, as we should.
Okay,
we're not submitting to them for rule.
Okay, thank you, Ken. I appreciate the addition. Respond, Doc, if you'd like, any way you want.
Basically, when the caller says that that I have, it would be impossible to show a clear intention to to attack our nation, given what I have said. I'm sitting here mystified because I don't think I have said anything on the program today to give him any idea of what my views on that matter are, and I'd be glad to come lecture on it. But as a matter of fact, and I'm certain my views could be improved on, but I've given a lot of thought to that as to what would constitute a clear intention to attack your country and so forth. And so I just want to assure him as we end this conversation that I don't have that kind of simplistic understanding. I mean, let me just give you a way out scenario to show that point. If Canada were to have nuclear arms and Canada were to say, you know, in 3 weeks we're going to use these on the United States, because we are sick and tired of having to be, you know, living in your shadow and so forth, that would obviously constitute a clear intention to attack us, and I wouldn't have any problem with our protecting ourselves against that stated intention to attack us. And now, in world politics, it's much more subtle than that, and people with fine minds need to talk about that, and I think your caller hopefully would agree that we should talk about that. My problem is that you can't believe that it's just to go to war without talking about that and seeing that the facts warrant your intervention or the protecting of yourself. If you say we throw out the whole question of proving clear intention, basically you've come back to a warlord society where everybody can beat up on everybody else just because they think it's right. Because they say, well, we thought you were going to attack us. I mean, if I treated my next-door neighbor that way, if I went over right now and punched him in the nose, and when the police came, I said, well, because I thought he was going to do that to me tonight. And the police said, well, why'd you think that? And I say, well, now you're being simplistic, making me ask those questions. We'd all laugh that to scorn, and we should. We have to ask those tough questions, and we have to do the best we can to find the facts. But we certainly don't want to take the view that it's all right to go to war on the presumption that somebody's going to do something bad to us.
A brief timeout, and we'll come back for our last segment here with Dr. Greg Bonson.
Hawkeye Water hooked on phonics and learned to read. I did.
Call 1-800-ABCDEFG.
29 after 10 and 1040 WHO Radio. During the next hour, Dave Stanley from Iowans for Tax Relief is going to join us. And after Keith Kirkpatrick updates us on farmer markets, we're going to have some open topic time. But right now, for the next 5 minutes or so, we're going to take as many calls as we can for our guest, Dr. Greg Bonson, who is a theologian who is trying to help us think through just war theory. Doc, let's talk to some more folks, okay?
Go ahead.
And this is Jerry. Good morning.
Good morning. Something that's been ignored so far, I believe, is the historical position and interpretation of the early Christian church during the first 300 years of Christianity. And my study of this early history has pretty much shown that they rejected war totally. They preferred death to participation in war, the early Christians, and that then in the 4th century, when the Emperor Constantine took over and talked the Christians into starting to fight, they invented this just war theory. But even that, in that just war theory, they stated that you couldn't kill civilians. Well, modern war just ignores that.
Yeah.
And, Doctor, would you agree with me that this total change of Christianity in the 4th century from total rejection of war and preference of death to it to this so-called just war theory that's ended up in crusades and slaughter of Christians slaughtering each other against Jesus' command to love one another, and that these two world wars we've had, and now and even the rise of Islam can be attributed to the failure of the church to teach what Jesus taught and to teach the whole world these things.
Interesting question. What do you think, Doc?
Well, I don't agree with the reading of early Christian history that has been given by the caller. I don't think that the opposition of the early church fathers to war was the total opposition that it's been portrayed as being. There was a great deal of conscientious objection to war among early Christian fathers because of the pagan and idolatrous involvement that Christians would be involved in if they went to war and participated in the Roman army and so forth. And, of course, many of the causes of warfare they thought would be unjust as well. So I don't think that the early history of the church is quite as black and white as it's been portrayed. But more importantly, you know, we can debate the facts of history later. More importantly, I think the standard that we have to apply in moral questions is not the history of the church, be it early or medieval or reformational. The standard that we apply is going to be the teaching of Scripture itself.
Are there rules to war?
Yes, the Bible gives us, you know, rules for warfare. In the Old Testament, we, in Deuteronomy chapter 7, Deuteronomy 20, for instance, we have God laying down the requirements for prosecuting a just war. And, of course, we have to exclude from that the holy war, aggressive war that was authorized by God, because that doesn't apply to our situation. But even apart from that, the Bible tells us that there are rules of war, and one of them is precisely what your caller has given, is that we must be careful of civilians in a time of war. The means that are employed, the violence that is inflicted at a time of war, must be discriminate as well as proportionate. We mustn't use more violence than is called for, but the violence that is called for must be applied discriminately so that the civilians are not suffering in any way that is not absolutely necessary to the conflict. Now, in our modern world, we obviously have the problem that someone like Saddam Hussein and others will actually quarter civilians in places where we would have to engage in warfare in order to prosecute our cause, and they do that because they know we have a conscience and we don't believe in killing civilians and so forth. And when that happens, it's one of the sad necessities of war, that civilians are going to die. But from a Christian standpoint, we don't believe in unnecessarily killing civilians just because it's a time of war. We believe that there are restraints God puts on us, even when it's right for us to go to war.
This is Carl. If we hurry, Carl, we can get your comments.
Okay. The world wars have been talked about a little bit, so I'll pass on my comments on those. But in the Revolutionary War, we fought a war of independence. I really appreciate your reasoning in the way that you're defending your equating a just war primarily with self-defense, but does a colony that is feeling oppressed, although not under direct military threat as long as they behave themselves, do they have any kind of right of self-determination?
All right, great question. All right. What do you think, Doc? We only have about a minute here.
Okay, I'll make it real brief. I believe that you are right to call it a war of independence rather than a revolutionary war.
Yes.
In that particular case, it was justified on the part of the colonists to rise up against King George III for the reasons given in the Declaration of Independence. Most people only know the preamble to the Declaration. You need to read everyone needs to read the whole thing to see that there were certain rights that all Englishmen had that were being violated by the king. And so this was not a revolution, unless you want to say it was the king revolting against his subjects and doing what he had promised not to do. And therefore, I see this as lawful self-defense against what the king was doing contrary to promise. And the Declaration of Independence gives the grounds for doing that. It's not just that, hey, we'd like to be free. That's the 20th century version. If you go back and actually look at the documents, you'll see that they were prosecuting a lawsuit against the King of England.
Who broke the contract, who violated his own contract.
That's exactly right.
He said, hey, the king broke the contract, we're no longer under it.
That's right. And that, by the way, was understood by Englishmen, that if your ruler does not live up to his end of the bargain, as it were, then you're not under obligation to him.
Thank you. Excellent question here. Dr. Bonson, thank you for your time this morning. If folks would like the tape series or more information, they can call that other number, that 916-268-3914. And your tape series on a view of war, Christian view of war, is available.
Thank you.
Thank you indeed.
Okay, bye-bye.